Blog Talk Radio.
Happy birthday. Yeah. We want to dedicate this song to everyone who has a birthday today. And that means you, and you, and you, and you. Because having a birthday is a special occasion. And we hope you have a happy celebration and a many, many more to come.
By Gumbo for the Soul International, Dream Castle Villa, and the Shy Light.
You know the name.
You saw their story.
You remember the hits.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for the legendary Shy Light featuring Marshall Thompson.
For over 50 years, the legendary Shy Lights have performed all over the world to standing room only crowds.
And now here's a brand new book
from the only original remaining member of this fabulous group.
The book is entitled Last Man Standing by Marshall Thompson, which chronicles the group's rise to fame with two number one hits and dozens of Billboard top 10 hits.
The Shy Lights were forced to be reckoned with. Last Man Standing is the story of a personal side of a man who sang about love, romance, and dreams. It will have you laughing out loud one moment and tearing at your heartstrings the very next. Last Man Standing by the legendary Marshall Thompson. Available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and eBooks.
Ever wanted to get away from it all? Maybe an inexpensive honeymoon, or even a second honeymoon, or just a mini vacation for the two of you? Now you can. You can go to the Shy Lights home, away from home, when they're not on tour. It's called the Shy Lights Dream Castle Villa, where you can relax in luxurious surroundings, where the staff and all amenities are at your full disposal. Their private gated villa offers 24-hour on-property security. Dream Castle Villa is just 20 minutes away from the newly constructed International Airport in Montego Bay, Jamaica. Enjoy incredible views of the Caribbean Sea and the Iron Shore Golf Course. The Shy Lights Dream Castle Villa is a relaxing, soothing, and romantic experience that's excellent for small private weddings, wedding renewals, engagements, anniversaries, or just a mini vacation for two. For reservations, visit their website at dreamcastlevilla.com or call toll-free at 888-747-9802 and see what other luxuries await you. Relax, just like the Shy Lights at the Shy Lights Dream Castle Villa, and hold on to your dreams.
And welcome back to A Book Is Born by Gumbo for the Soul and Tribe Family Channel, our nationwide lineup of seasoned authors, along with our generous sponsors, have teamed up to bring right content and relatable dialogue for your listening and reading pleasure. Grab a good seat and prepare to feast as we dish out this serving of gumbo. You won't leave hungry. Our next guest on A Book Is Born is author Alan T. Black. to discuss his literary journey and the 411 on where to grab a copy of his new page turner. Yes, indeed. He just dropped a book, so we want to congratulate him on A Book Is Born. Tribe Family Channel, you can call in at 515-605-9351, or certainly you can listen online at blogtalkradio.com/Gumbo for the Soul. Tribe Family Channel is a Gumbo for the Soul international family brand created, owned, and operated by yours truly, Beverly Black. And ladies and gentlemen, it brings me great honor to welcome Mr. Alan T. Black to A Book Is Born. Hi, Alan. How are you?
Good evening, Cousin Beverly. How are you doing tonight? I'm so excited to be back with you again. It is an honor. And you know, it's divinely ordered, because realistically, there aren't too many people in my life experiences with the same last name of Black. So when we first met, I thought, wait a minute, her last name is Black? And I'm like, wow, that's, you know, God, you just doing something special, because I really believe you're the first person I've met outside immediate family with the same last name.
Wow. I know when we first met, and for those that are just tuning in and are new to Tribe Family Channel, Alan T. Black is no stranger. You have sponsored many shows. You've sponsored your tour here. We're thankful for that. It is philanthropy like yours that keeps us on the air. And so when we first met, yes, it was like, okay, we at least have to find out if we're related. But we just figured, no, we're not, right? But we don't really know. How do we really know?
Well, you know what? That's a great question. But we truly don't know. We don't know.
Yeah. Well, in the coming year, much will be revealed as we get closer and deeper into what shapes us. I think we're in a period of time where everyone is really looking for who they are, whose they are, and what difference they can make in their lifetime. So I'm definitely going to be looking further into my family tree, and I'll let you know if I check out Alan T. Black.
All right. I'll see what we can find out, okay?
Yeah. Well, I just really want to thank you and welcome you back to A Book Is Born. Congratulations. I understand that you have a new page turner. So because you have been and are so familiar with Tribe Family Channel, I said to myself, you know, I have to start throwing Alan some curveballs here. I'm going to make up a whole different lineup of questions, and I'll just weave in and out of some different questions to spark, you know, elements of conversations that we may not have had. But for our listeners that are new to you, who is Alan T. Black? Let our listeners know who you are.
Alan T. Black is a 66-year-old man who has been on an amazing journey over the course of my lifetime. He is a person who realistically has had a writing passion probably from the time I was in high school. That's really where my writing passion was ignited. And from there, it took off when I went to college. Now, amazingly, the authorship side of Alan did not really begin in college, because in 75, Beverly and audience listening, I really began my writing from the musical side as far as being a lyricist. I'm that guy that listens to music and I'm automatically tuned into the story within the song. On some of your Facebook posts, you always have something in there from the magnificent Marshall Thompson from the Shy Lights, and I often listen to their music, and lyrics are powerful, Beverly, as you know, because if you think about one of the songs that Mr. Thompson and Shy Lights did way back, I think it was 69, 70, somewhere in there, Power to the People, and you listen to those lyrics, and you listen to how they wrote something which is almost 50 years ago, but the power of the story that's being told within that song means more today than it did 50 years ago. And so for me, that's the fascination with writing as far as music is concerned, because I love the message in the music. And that's really where I got my start, starting back in 75. I'll never forget the first lyrics I did in terms of a song where I was trying to match up with somebody to put the music to it. I originally took those lyrics to one of my college professors, Beverly, who was like my mentor. I was scared to death because I was like, I had no idea what I was doing. But I went to him anyway. I said, well, this is something I really have a dream of doing. I'll never forget, Beverly, he read them over. He said, you know, you got something, you got potential here. And he encouraged me, and he said, well, whatever it is that you do, just continue to follow your passion, and one day it's going to pay off for you. And, you know, it's amazing.
Wait, stop right there. Stop right there now. Big up to your teacher. I'm sorry to cut you off, but, you know, we hear so often, especially for people of color, that a teacher discouraged and told that child, you know, you'll never make it in this field. Mm-hmm. So for you to say that your teacher told you, hey, keep at this and encourage you, that's just refreshing to hear. Now, so where are you? What town are we talking about? What high school is this?
This was actually the professor. This was when I was at the University of Lincoln.
Oh, University.
In Lincoln.
Okay.
But let me go back to high school. I can trace back even further to high school because I can remember my senior year, Beverly, our English literature class, we had to write an essay and an overview of a book that we read and incorporated into some life experiences. And so I wrote something for the teacher, and the teacher got it, and I just thought, well, it's okay. It'll get me at least a C for a grade. And to my utter shock, I think I got like an A on the paper, and the teacher was like, man, you know, you've got writing talent. You need to do something with this. And I'm going to be honest with you. I was 17, so I'm thinking, okay, he's just blowing smoke. He's not really serious about it. But one thing we need to keep in mind is that from the spiritual side, God always positions someone in your life along the road to speak something into your life for a time and a season, which may not be then. It may come to fruition later on. And now that I look back, the genesis of that writing piece for Alan really began with that first essay and book review as a high school senior. Then I graduated and went on to college, and my passion for music has always been there from the time I was like 12 or 13 years old. And so I've always, like I said before, been interested in the lyrics within the music, because that's really the essence of what music is all about for me, is the story that you're telling me. And so I started lyrically creating things in 75. And the second confirmation came from my college professor at that time. This is in 75. He was like my professor and my mentor. He was the one that said, musically, you know, what you need to do is get with somebody who can put music to your words. And he told me, he said, if this is your passion, never give it up. And Beverly, that was so important, because whether we realize it or not, the words that we share and that we speak into somebody's life can literally lift them up, or it can tear them down. And so it's important what we say. It's not by accident that scripture talks about, I believe the tongue is one of the smallest instruments, but it might be the deadliest of them all, just because of the fact that we can literally speak life into somebody and we can literally kill somebody's spirit. And so from that moment forward, I've always remembered what my English teacher told me in high school and then my college professor in 75. And I just continued to move forward with my writing piece. Now, musically, from that point going forward, as a lyricist, I've collaborated in gospel, soul, R&B, hip-hop, some jazz pop, even some Christian rock. And this past summer, I experimented with some country as well. Now, people are thinking, okay, how in the world does a black guy, a black man from Omaha, Nebraska, delve into country? But what I want the audience to understand is that it's about the story that you're telling. And as the creator, the lyricist, when I was creating the storyline for these country songs that I did, I had to first create a storyline that had an appeal. And then second, I had to step back after the creation of the story and say, what's the best vehicle, the best genre to express what it is I want to be said? And so I made that determination that it would be country music. And so I stepped out of the box as well with the writing piece of that for the music. It also drives home another point that whatever your calling is, don't necessarily think that it's going to be within, say, the normal box. Because sometimes, and a lot of times, God will call you out of a different box and take you in a different direction that you really had no intention of going in. But he knows best, better than anybody. So in this case, with the country side of this, he directed me in that way to go that direction to create two country songs over the last 2 years. So I'm very honored that I did so. I openly admit that a lot of the people that have heard them looked at me with an odd look like, okay, this doesn't match your background, because they knew I came from the era of the 60s, of like the Shy Lights and the Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, the Motown, all of that. That's my heartbeat. But the creative and the artistic side of me said, okay, I've got to be willing to branch out to find different avenues to express what it is that I'm trying to say. And so that's why that direction as far as, say, country music. So I've continued to create lyrically as far as, say, music is concerned. In fact, I know right now my music project for 2022 is going to be a Christmas song. So I've already got the storyline.
Well, hang on before you hang on. Let me interject and come in here with you because you did touch on question number six, believe it or not. You way down on my list. Well, because I was going to ask you the influences within, you know, your schooling and your educational background, and how did that background help shape your views in what you write? And you really expounded and answered that, including, you know, your professors, the influencers, and then, of course, stepping outside of the box, because the first music that I've ever heard from you was the country music that we did play on the show. And at that time, I thought you were crossing over from writing to music. Now I'm learning that music was the foundation.
Yeah, absolutely. Music has always been the foundation because I'm fascinated with story. That's the thing. I'm that nerdy guy, Beverly, that will bring up a song on YouTube. And let's just say it's like Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. And so I'm listening to What's Going On Inner City Blues. Well, I'm listening to the song, but I have another browser open because I want to read the words as he's singing them. Because that's how passionate, how deep my love is for the story. Because I'm fascinated to find out, what is the story telling me? What is it that you want me to get out of it? Where do I need to go with it? How does it fit into my life? Songs as far as great stories stay with us forever. And lyrically, there is scientific evidence that you can go and talk with somebody who's 85, 90 years old, and you can play a song for them from, say, their 20s. And within about 5 to 10 seconds, they will recognize that song, and they can literally repeat the lyrics immediately because those lyrics, that storyline in sync with the music bid that you hear is ingrained in our brain. So immediately they can go back and they can recall those lyrics to that song. That's the power of what words can do within music. All of us can go back 50 years and think about songs from, say, Motown, if it was a Temptation, or if it was Marvin or Gladys or somebody like that, and we hear it instantly, we can recall the lyrics instantly, we can almost recount the times that we've heard that song and what it meant to us then and what it means to us now. That's the power of words. So,
well, let me tell you what happened to me to speak to your point of the power of words. I literally thought that I had written some lyrics. And I was in my early 30s when I started singing the lyrics to my elder sister. She immediately said, "You didn't write that song." And I'm like, "Yes, I did. You did not write that song. Do you know that you can go back and find this song, and it is like from, I guess, the 50s or something?" I said, "Well, someone had to have been playing this song and singing this song around me." Now, when I tell you what this song is, you're going to say, "You didn't like that song." But the song is "Mama's Little Baby Loves Shortening Bread." Have you ever heard those lyrics? Uh-oh, I guess we've lost Alan. Did your call drop off? All right, well, I guess we will go to a quick song. Alan has dropped off, but we are speaking to him on A Book Is Born, and he is back. Alan, you had dropped off. I was going to go to a song, but you're back so fast. But did you finish hearing, did you hear the end of my sentence?
No, I did not. Something happened. There was some noise in the background, and it cut off. So if you would just kind of go back to what you were saying.
No worries. So what I was saying is, to your point about the power of words, in my early 30s, I thought I had written this song, and I started singing it to my sister, my elder sister who has passed on, who immediately told me, "You didn't write that song." And I'm like, I'm looking at her bewildered because the song originated from within me. Is that's where I got it from. Well, I was, before you dropped off, I mentioned that as soon as I tell you the title of the song, you're going to feel the same way my sister did. The name of the song is "Mama's Little Baby Loves Shortening Bread."
Oh, yes. We all heard that as children. Yes.
Well, see, I thought I wrote that. Do you know I thought I wrote that song because now I'm born in 59, so I'm 62. So that song had to be late 50s, early 60s.
Easily.
But I don't know. Older. I'm sorry?
It might be older than that if I think about it.
I know it's a very old song, but when you talk about the power of words being implanted and when you hear them, you don't know, and this is what I tell people, you can teach your child from the womb. You can sing, you can recite the alphabet, you can count, you can do all of that while you're pregnant because your baby can hear, right? So
absolutely.
For me to have that song permeated inside of me, where did it come from? And it goes back to your point about the power of words, song, you know, even to spirit. When that seed is planted down inside of you, like you were saying about your, you know, your teacher, once that seed was planted and you were encouraged, you took off and you continued. So the power of word and spoken word in and of itself has power. And I just wanted to come in with that because I was a child and there's no way you could have told me that I didn't write that song. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go into some of the questions that we have here. I love the conversation. You have answered a lot of the questions as in terms of what motivated you to become a writer and the influences in school and your style of writing, being a writer slash singer and what have you. How many books have you published? Let's talk about you, the author, and you have a new book. So how many books have you published? What is your latest book?
This third book be out probably about a week or so. It's called Just a Closer Walk. This is number three. And
yay.
So this represents the third book in the series. The first book came out in 2017 called Here I Am, Lord. The second book, which I was recognized as a bestseller on Amazon, is called In the Spirit Intended. And then this third book, which will be out in about a week or so, is called Just a Closer Walk. So all three books I've written over the last 6 years. Ironically, I write, it seemed like every other year I'm releasing a book. And so I'm kind of on track for that. I have a fourth book project probably for 2023, I'm still formulating an idea for that, which will have to be a co-write between myself and my sister. So I'm really excited about that, to be honest with you.
Oh,
so
nice.
This will be the third book that's coming out in about another week or so. So it's been an amazing journey. It's been an unexpected journey, to be honest with everybody.
Well, congratulations on your impending third book, your junior book. You have your freshman, your sophomore, and your junior is coming out.
I thought about this. Thank you.
Well, let me ask you this. With those titles, I mean, it just speaks spirituality for me. You mentioned God and direction and what have you. So where do you get the ideas for your books? Where are these ideas coming from?
Well, I'd like to sit here and try to impress everybody and say I'm super brilliant and deeply spiritual and all that, but that would be a total lie because I'm not. And so I have to be honest with everybody and say that the genesis of Alan T. Black, the author, really began probably in late 2015, 2016, whereby I've been retired for several years, so I was working at my part-time job in the mornings from like barely about 1 to about noon. Well, the writing, I guess, just started early one morning in late 2015, 2016, and I just started, I guess what you would call, just freestyle, just writing out some different thoughts and different reflections that I've had and experienced throughout my life. And so it really kind of took off from there. Now, I will confess openly and very quickly that with the first book, Here I Am, Lord, which I really completed the writing of it by the end of 2016. You know, Beverly, as I was writing that book, the first two or three chapters of the book were really kind of frightening in a lot of respects because I was writing in a different style, in a different arena, and I was writing in an arena that I was completely unfamiliar with. And so I would literally write these short stories and essays in the first book, and I remember after the first two or three, it scared me because actually, to be honest with you, for full transparency, I would finish one of these stories / essays and maybe go take a break for 5 minutes and come back. And I could not remember what I had written about 20 minutes earlier. Mm-hmm. I could not remember. And it scared me. It really scared me.
Just pouring
out
the spirit.
It was. I had never experienced that before, Beverly. It scared me. I called a friend of mine who was a minister. I was like, bro, this is what's happening. I've never done this before because the lyrical side of me can recall whatever I'm writing. I can stop, go back, and pick it up and go from there. But this was a whole different experience as far as writing, really, and being led by the Holy Spirit. I never experienced that. So it was frightening. But he told me, as much as anything, he said, Alan, if you're just going to do one thing, just be obedient. Just be obedient to what the Holy Spirit is asking you to do. And it's going to take you to places that you never expected to go. And so I thought about Beverly, what he said, and I said, okay, I'm just going to trust God in this journey to see where it's going to lead. So I finished writing up about 35 of these stories / essays by the end of 2016. And I remember, Beverly, I was sitting there at the end of 2016, and I was thinking to myself, well, what am I supposed to do with these things? I had no idea what to do. I didn't know what to do next. I'll never forget one of my former students told me, she read a couple, and she said, well, why don't you publish them in a book? And so I looked at it, I was like, well, I don't know how to do that. And so I'll never forget, Beverly, she told me, she said, well, you know what? When I was at the university, because I was her academic advisor and her mentor and everything, kind of guided her through her undergraduate degree, she said, well, you taught me and showed me that I can't give up on a dream and to pursue my passion. She said, well, how come you can't do the same thing? And so I kind of looked at it at first. I had an attitude because I was like, okay, I'm the mentor, you're the mentee, so you don't get to tell me that. I had an attitude about it, and then I thought, wait a minute, she's right. There's no reason I can't pursue this. So I went into 2017. I actually was messing around in Fiverr. I'll never forget this. This was in February of 2017. I joined the Fiverr worldwide community, and I put out a question. Yeah, you're familiar with Fiverr, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I went through Fiverr, Beverly, and I reached out and I said, well, I've got these essays, these stories. I'd like to put them in a book form. Can somebody help me? And I put in a request on a Friday night, and I'm thinking, okay, it might take me 6 or 7 months, and somebody might get back with me, and then I'll see what I can do later on. To my utter shock, and this just shows how God works, the following day was a Saturday, and I checked my email. I had 35 people asking if they could work with me to get my book together, the first book. That scared me because I was like, okay, God, what am I supposed to do here? Because I'm like, I was hoping for one response, but not 35. Not 35.
Wow.
People. Blew me out of the
mind. Right.
So I spent 2 weeks paring down who I wanted to work with, and actually I wound up working with a lady out of South Africa. And it shows the power of the time and the season that we're in with technology, because she and I worked together basically through the internet to get all of this set up for my first book, which debuted on Amazon in May of 2017, called Here I Am, Lord. Now, if people wonder why the book is called Here I Am, Lord, I'm going to be really honest with you. About two-thirds of the way through writing the content for the first book, I was still kind of struggling with, okay, am I doing the right thing? Am I in over my head? And then finally, I just said one day, I said, okay, Lord, here I am. What do you want me to do? And I just surrendered. I'm tired of trying to box with God with my arms too short. And so
right?
I said, here I am, Lord. And that became the title, Here I Am, Lord. And that's why the first book is called Here I Am, Lord. So I did it. I released it in May of 2017. And I'll never forget, the first night I saw it on Amazon, I actually just sat here at my computer. I just stared at the picture of the book for about 5 minutes, not because I was feeling cocky or anything like that. I just stared at the book for about 5 minutes or so, Beverly, just because I could not believe what God had brought me to at that point in my life. I couldn't believe it.
That happens.
I was like,
that
wow, God.
Yeah.
It was surreal. I remember looking at the book and I said, wow, God, we did it. And I'm like, I can't believe it. And I just stared and stared and stared. And I to this day, I'm still shocked that it happened. And so I thought after, okay, 2017, well, okay, I did the book, God, that you wanted me to do. So now I'm ready to go back to my music, because there's some music projects I want to do. Well, we know that Jeremiah 29:11 talks about he has the plans that he has for us. Implicit within that scripture, Jeremiah 29:11, to me is the fact that he knows the plans that he has for us. Mm-hmm. That doesn't have any the plans that we have, because a lot of times our plans don't have anything to do with his plans. None.
Most of the time, our plans don't have anything to do with his plans. Well, one of the common denominators and the what I want to call a thread throughout what you talk about is God's direction and directing your path. You know, you can tie in so much of the journey that you're witnessing with you following God's direction for your life. I keep hearing that. And, you know, oftentimes that's not something that anyone is attuned to. You have to know yourself and know him to really balance your will and his will so that you won't go out ahead of God. So it's a balancing act of following the direction that God is ordering your steps in, especially when it comes to producing your craft, whether it's your music and songs, or just like you were saying earlier when you came up with the book title, Here I Am, Lord, because you've been fighting and resisting what you know in your spirit he's been planning down in there, directing you, and finally you just give up. Here I am, Lord. Because, you know, you don't have to be a holy roller to know whether you're resisting something that's being directed from within you.
And a lot of times, too, I've come to experience the fact that if it's been planted down inside you, to quote the old Joe Louis phrase, you can run, but you can't hide. You can run from whatever this calling is going to be or has been established, and you can run from it all you want, but at some point you're going to have to come face to face with the fact that this is the calling that God has, and it's time for me to answer that calling. A lot of us in our Christian walk, if we're going to be transparent and be honest, we have been that Jonah. We have been Jonah in terms of we have decided, okay, God, I know what's best. I know what it is that I need to be doing, and I'll get back with you later and let you know if we can hook up later.
I know what's best for me attitude.
Yeah, well, we all do that. We've all done that.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
of course.
He just lets you say, okay, I'm going to let you do this, but at some point, guess what? I'm going to shut you down, and I'm going to get your attention, and then you're going to listen to what it is I have to say. I've always taken the story of Jonah and interpreted it as meaning Jonah reached that point where he said, okay, God, you got my attention. What is it that you require of me? We've all been at that point in our lives. If we're going to say that we haven't, we're not being honest with ourselves or the person we see in the mirror. So as much as anything, what the
well,
calling
that's
the that
first person we can lie to. You know,
sure.
You can lie to yourself, but you can't lie to everybody else.
No, you can't. You can't. I mean, we're good at lying to ourselves, but we're professional at that. Some of us are, and let's just be real about it. So the journey is really about, number one, are you going to be obedient? And these are traits, what I call the essence of the characteristics of God himself. Are you going to be obedient? And the process of being obedient, Beverly, also means that you have to be willing to humble yourself and to say, okay, it's bigger than me, God. There's a bigger purpose.
Come on.
And I need to know what it is that you want me to do. Being humble is always going to be a struggle, because of our human nature to think that we know best or that we are in control. We're all given to that mindset that, yeah, I got it going on. It's all good. I got this. And most of the time, we don't. We have a tendency to make a mess. I know I have. I can't sleep with anybody else. And so you got to start with those two things, at least in my experience in this journey.
Well, when I think in terms of the writing process, doing the work, being humble enough to set your ego aside, you know, there are times when we may not receive the news or get the feedback that we thought we should have received when it comes to our craft. An editor may slash some of our work and redline, you know, a few paragraphs here and there throughout your novel. And you have to be able to, what, be humble, listen to the feedback. We all know that we have the next bestseller. Everyone's next book is the best thing since sliced bread. But what if it's not? What if you need some feedback and have to walk that road in order to really come to the maturity that you must as a writer, as someone that can take the feedback. Now, I'll ask you this question. For instance, have you ever received a less than average review? And if so, how did you respond? Because that was one of my teaching moments where I had to go through it. You know, I had to be humble and take some feedback, but then I also had a perspective about the person doing the reviewing. So how did you respond in a moment that may have been humbling to you?
As much as anything, Beverly, when those kind of, say, indifferent responses have come back, I take it to mean, okay, there is room for improvement. How are you going to receive what they are suggesting or what their thoughts are? And so a lot of times we have to keep in mind that those comments can be constructive criticism. And as well, it's important that we understand it's not personal. You don't personal and think it's attacking your character or something like that. I've had tons of rejection from the music side for things that I've done over the last 30, 35 years or so. Now, a lot of it has been critiquing and improvement, and so I take that in the spirit and tenet and say, okay, I need to improve this or improve that. But nobody's at the point where, like you said, you're going to be cranking out the next bestseller that's going to hit number one on the New York Times bestseller list. But at the same time, you want to be open to what people are going to say and try to receive it and not internalize it to the point where you think they're trying to tear you down or just trying to be dealing with, say, a personal attack. It's not about that at all. So, and you also have to be careful, too, because and let's be realistic, but you got to be honest about this, Beverly. There are going to be some people who are just going to criticize you because they just like to criticize you. It's just that simple.
It's okay to have that hopefulness of that number one slot. No one aspires to be number two, so while you're aspiring to be number one, you know, my greatest aspiration is to be the best version of Beverly that I can be. Once I finish comparing, you know, doing what I shouldn't do, and I'll tell you what happened with me was, for our listening audience, you're tuned into A Book Is Born on Tribe Family Channel, which is a Gumbo for the Soul International family brand. I'm Beverly Black. I'm the creator of Gumbo for the Soul Publications. So I created Gumbo for the Soul in 2003. My first book is a two-time literary award winner. It's endorsed by Tavis Smiley. So my second book is endorsed by Bruce George. He's the creator of Russell Simmons' Deaf Poetry Jam on HBO. We get to book number three, and I get a three-star review, and I was livid. I'm going to be real, okay? Let me be real. So I use that as a moment to course correct what I'm doing. And you know what I stopped doing? I stopped asking for reviews. Because guess what? I came to the point with a three-star review, you apparently do not understand that Gumbo for the Soul is focused on health and wellness, and you are an urban fiction reviewer. So I can ascertain and completely see that you have not read this book, because this book is focused on health and wellness, women's breast cancer, and you know, things that affect women. It's nonfiction. So when I looked at the pool of reviewers and what they were accustomed to reading, and I realized that, well, I'm outside the box. So you have to understand that you are an entity in and of yourself, and you can be outside the box. You can aspire for the number one slot. You just don't have to, you know, go around and tell everyone, you know, that you are the it of the day. You know, it's a humbling thing to just really hone in on your craft and set your sights on being the best version of you and doing what God called you to do. So that was my humbling moment where I said I will never again ask anybody to review anything out of Gumbo for the Soul Publications, because I believe so much in what I'm doing that guess what? I don't need your review. I came out with my first book, got me 5 stars. That's enough. I got my 5 star. That's it. Okay, now I just left the Hollywood Walk of Fame star with Marshall Thompson, the man you mentioned from the Shy Life. So that's enough stars.
That's good. And so you've accomplished your purpose.
I'm sorry?
You accomplished your purpose. Hey, them other people don't understand it, like, hey, like the Bible says, you got to dust off your feet and keep on walking. You got to do what you got to do.
You know, you really have to. It really goes back to the thread, that commonality of what I hear in what you were saying is following that direction, following that inner guidance, and really pouring it out of your spirit. When you were writing and you were putting it all out there and down there, and then you went back and it was like, wow, I don't even remember writing this. I have to read it myself. You know, you're pouring it out of your spirit. You're an open vessel. And I believe that most authors really believe in their work and their craft, whether they're nonfiction, fiction, poets, or what have you. Believing in yourself and doing the work is par for the course, because if you believe in what you're doing, then you're willing to go through what you have to go through to prove out to yourself, if nothing else, just to get it poured out of yourself. So,
exactly.
Now, what were some of the challenges you faced as a writer? It seems to flow from your spirit and you follow the direction that seems to be planted down inside of you with regards to, here I am, God, you know, have your way with me. You're going to stop fighting it. In terms of the writing process, perhaps even getting to the point where you're now soon to be 3 times over published, were there any challenges within that realm that you faced on this journey? Maybe there's some things that some of our listeners may learn from what you've overcome?
You know, there are some misconceptions, and I think you understand this, and I know you identify with this barely, that are associated with authorship itself. The first misconception that I had to get past was the fact that, okay, in writing each book, particularly starting with the first book, I was so concerned about, oh my goodness, my book is only 140 pages, and I'm thinking a book has got to be 400 or 500 pages or something, and then someone explained to me that's not really what it's all about. It's about the quality of what you're putting out there and you're expressing what's on the inside of you. It's not to be defined quantitatively as far as, is the book 400 pages, is it 500 pages or something like that. So that was my immediate challenge as far as, say, continuing the writing process. Because I can give you an example. One of my former students has just released her second book. She's written two children's books. And Beverly, each of those books, and they're illustrated like a big book that you would find at the library that you would read to like your daughter, something like that. Well, each of her books, Beverly, is 20, 25 pages or something like that. But the quality of the writing and the message that you get out of each book is outstanding. And so I would say to our listeners, don't get hung up on, is your book 300 or 400 pages long? That's not what's important. What's important is that you pour into that book itself, what's inside of you. That's what's going to stand if it's 20 pages, if it's 2,000 pages, whatever the case may be. And I think that was my first issue I had to deal with. The second issue is what I call internal, external, and that's the fact that once you become a published author, then you're going to have to deal with the question of, at least this is my experience, what do you classify as success? Because success is an individual thing, in my opinion. I've learned this along this road to life. My initial thought was, well, I wasn't successful or I failed because I didn't sell 1.5 million copies or whatever the case may be. But a friend of mine said, okay, you're looking at this wrong, and here's why. He said, first of all, for you to get a book published, that is success because statistics show that out of 100 people, Beverly, I know you know this better than anybody, out of 100 people, only 3 people actually finish a book to get it published to begin with. So if you get to that point, that is successful, okay? And then secondly, your success is an individual thing because it is not to be measured in terms of the number of sales and are you getting on BET? Are you on, say, Black Cable Network or something? I mean, those things are great. You'd like to have that. But is your book touching somebody's life? Is it impacting their life? Does it inspire them? Does it cause them to think? Those are the internal things that define success for me. I've had people say the books that I've written, they've enjoyed, they're inspired by, they really got something out of each book that I've written up to this point. That, for me, makes me happier than anything else. Yeah, I'd like my book to be picked up by Oprah. Who wouldn't? But, you know, it may never get to that point. More than likely, it won't. It won't. But this much I do know. As far as being obedient to what God's called me to do and answering the call, if I'm able to say that my book is speaking to the heart of somebody and maybe it impacts their life, then that's the success that I hang my hat on. Because that's really a blessing for me to be able to say that. If it touched somebody's life, I'm humbled to say that, hey, it wasn't me, it was the Holy Spirit. So that was number two. And then number three, and let's just keep it real here. You're going to deal with people who are going to say, I don't think you can do it, you're just wasting your time. haters are going to hate. I remember my first book, I was getting ready to get it together, and I talked to a guy who had written two books, and none of them did anything. And matter of fact, he had his book sitting in a garage, in a whole garage full of books. And Beverly, it was the most negative conversation I've ever had in the last 20 years. And so we've had them. Let's be real. We all have had those conversations with people who are so negative they're just dream killers. And so when I got off the phone, I thought to myself, no, I don't know what his experience was, because that's his experience. But I said to myself, now, you know what? God, you didn't bring me to this point for me to just stop right now. So I'm just going to shake off what he said. It went in one ear and out the other ear. And I just kept pressing on to what it is I was being called to do. And I'm saying that to say that you're going to have people who are not going to understand. You're going to have people who are going to try to talk you down and say you're wasting your time. But if that's what God has put in you, you are charged with the responsibility.
Go ahead and finish the tail end of that, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, you're charged with the responsibility of answering that call. And sometimes in that journey to fulfill your dream or your purpose, everybody that starts out with you is not going to be everybody who goes with you. We all have been there. It's just the reality of life. Everybody ain't going to go with you. It's just the way it is. So, but you can't let the fact that they're not on board, you can't let that stop you. You've got to keep pressing on to the higher calling.
Ooh-wee. Well, I love your answer so much so that I have a response to each point. Point number one, book size. You know, my first book, The Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community, out of Gumbo for the Soul, the impact therein was to offset the low graduation rate. We had such a 50% high school dropout rate in the Black community. But it didn't start off as Gumbo for the Soul, The Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community. It started off as Gumbo for the Soul, Inspirations for People of Color. But I started questioning, well, what impact is that going to make? We have enough inspirationals. What we need to do is be able to get our children, you know, to a higher level of understanding and comprehending the English language. So I had already put out a call for submissions, and these series anthologies have published people from all over the world. In fact, we have open calls for submissions right now out of Gumbo for the Soul Publications series anthologies, gumbofortheSoulInternational.com. But the first book, the size was so overwhelming. It was over 300 pages, and this was after I had to reject, you know, because there were so many, there was such an overwhelming response that, of course, you can't publish every response that you receive. So the first book was overwhelming, and it kind of set the tone for my expectations of an anthology. I was familiar with Chicken Soup for the Soul. God gave me Gumbo for the Soul. It resonated with the community, and it was successful. So the second book, less than half that size. And since the first book set the precedence for me on what the measure of an anthology should be, I had to come to some real terms with the second book not being as, responsive with submissions as the first book, which the second book is Gumbo for the Soul, Here's Our Child, Where's the Village, focusing on adoption and foster care. So all of our Gumbo for the Soul series anthologies are nonfiction on health and wellness. The third book was even smaller, and that was the one where I got the three-star review. So these were learning lessons. As I saw the size of the book, acquiesced to such a thin scope that I began to realize that I had to get out of that mindset. It was not about the size. And then all of my books are adorned with Gumbo for the Soul's book cover artist, Cynthia St. James, world-renowned, beautifully, brightly colored anthologies. And I would go on her website and I would find a cover, or I would find one of her paintings that matched the message. So that goes to your third point. What is it making an impact? You know, and I had to make sure that I didn't worry about the size, but that I made sure that whatever I was doing made an impact. Well, even though I learned that lesson when I got to my own book, I had to stretch and scratch to get to 100 pages. And I was like, oh, my goodness. So you really bring up a solid point. What are you in it for? You have to be focused on doing the work. It's not about the size of the book. It's about whether or not when you finish putting all that you have on that page, did you get it all out? Does
Thank
it
you.
Make an impact? And does it make an impact? And after that, that's it. You've done what you were led and called to do. And so that's what it was for me. Now, even when you talked about the size of the book, I turned around on my bookshelf and I pulled Maya Angelou's book out. Maya Angelou's I Shall Not Be Moved, ladies and gentlemen, this book is 50 pages, and that is including the author bio. So if that doesn't inspire you to keep going no matter what size your book is, I don't know what will. But I want to thank you so much. The time has flown by. We have come to the end of A Book Is Born. So, Mr. Alan T. Black, I want to thank you for being here, and I want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know where they can find you. Any last comments or remarks or anything you want to say to them where you know, they can pick up your new book, and closing remarks.
They can go to my website. The book should be there in about another week or two. My website is alantblack.com. Now, Alan is alantblack.com. And then they'll see information about the third book, which is called Just a Closer Walk, a collection of stories, reflections, how things from my past influenced my life today. And just really a reflection on my walk with God. So I'm very, very excited about that. If I were to sum up, and I know we're getting ready to wrap this up with comments, I would encourage everybody to listen to that small voice. That still small voice is telling you what it is that you're being called to do. Don't ignore it. Take the time to acknowledge it and say, okay, yes, this is what I'm called to do. Other people may not understand it, but don't worry about that. It's not about them. It's about you and your journey. And I learned something a long time ago in church, which has now really become a strong focal point for me in terms of this journey. Always remember that if God's called you for something, he's going to prepare you for it, because this much I know is true, Beverly. God does not call the qualified. He doesn't call the qualified, because he always qualifies those that he calls.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, and going back to the last point that you were making in terms of whether your book is making an impact or not, the thing is that when God gives you, when he gives it to you, don't expect other people to understand. They cannot see and understand your vision. So, like, you had the conversation on the phone with the brethren, and it was negative. They cannot see your dream and your perspective. No one is going to understand fully but you. And so don't waste your time trying to get anyone to really see your vision. It's your vision. God gave it to you. So follow through with your aspirations and go after them. So I want to thank you for being here with me, Alan. This has been another wonderful conversation with you. I'm going to invite you to some shows that are coming up because you mentioned a few things on this show, and I want to hear your voice on a show that is continuing through December. We don't have the dates down yet. It just got extended by our producers, and that's going to be the show that is named after Gumbo for the Soul's first book called The Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community. You mentioned being an educator, mentor. I feel that your voice can be impactful on that show because we really do have to start looking at what we need to do as a family in that demographic. That's about as best as plain as I can put it, ladies and gentlemen. We have got to take care of home because no one else is going to. So, again, AlanTBlack.com. Visit our guest. Alan, thank you so much for being here. You can find me at GumboForTheSoulInternational.com and also TribeFamilyChannel.com will take you to our social media page. I'm also at TribeFamilyUS on Twitter, at GumboForTheSoul on Twitter, Beverly Black on all other social media, and Beverly Black Johnson, GumboForTheSoulInternational.com. Thank you once again. I'm looking forward to a lot of exciting new authors that I'm connecting with on social media. I'm going to be putting out some new exciting promotions over the weekend. Gumbo for the Soul series anthologies has calls for submissions. We have an upcoming anthology that involves Dave Chappelle's mother, Dr. Yvonne Sion. She's written the foreword. We have Women of Honor, Men of Honor, Suicide is Not the Answer, and also Called to Serve. We're acknowledging people that have given their sacrifice and service for our freedom and even in the medical and educational field. So feel free to visit GumboForTheSoulInternational.com and submit to these series anthologies. And lastly, I will be converting our show, Soul School Music with Marshall Thompson, The Last Man Standing of the Shy Lights, into a book that will be coming out in August. And we have had everyone on this show, Otis Williams of The Temptations, The Last Man Standing of The Moments, Mr. Billy Brown, Mr. Henry Fambro of The Spinners, Howard Hewitt, I mean everyone, the Manhattans, you name it, we've had them. Soul School Music with Marshall Thompson, ladies and gentlemen, will be dropping August 2022. So everyone, stay blessed and be a blessing. Happy holidays to you and yours, and thank you so much for tuning in to A Book is Born on Tribe Family Channel, a Gumbo for the Soul International family brand. Thank you once again, Mr. Alan Black, and you have a blessed one, and we'll be talking soon, all right?
Thank you. Everybody be blessed, and please be safe.
Amen. And congratulations on your upcoming page turner. I'll be keeping up with you, and God bless.
God bless, Beverly. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Happy birthday. Yeah. We want to dedicate this song to everyone who has a birthday today. And that means you and you and you and you. Because having a birthday is a special occasion. And we hope you have a happy celebration and a many, many more to come. wish you a happy birthday once again, and we hope you have a many, many more to come. Yeah, this song is just for you.
Happy birthday to you.